I'm a child of the late 80s and early 90s. I know that makes me a kid in most of your eyes, but when I was a child and coming up, that was kind of the time that the in-home video game system began to really take off. And I remember in 89 or 90, whenever it was, when my dad brought home the first Nintendo Entertainment System. Maybe some of you can remember those days. Maybe you got one for your kids and how cool that was and how, you know, back in the day, you didn't just get the Nintendo. You got two controllers, you got a game, and there were two games on the game, Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt, and you got the little gun where you could shoot the ducks. It was a good day to be a kid back in those days. Today, it's a worse day to be a kid in some ways because, well, they have cooler games, so I guess it's better in that way. But when you buy it, you got to pay like three times as much as we paid for that. And if you want a game or a controller, you got to get extra, and everything's wireless, so it costs more, all those sorts of things. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So back in the day, I loved playing the Nintendo. I remember the first time I got on it, I got a little addicted, and I remember having an argument like the first day we got it. Not really an argument, like a pleading with my parents, please don't make me stop because I'm having so much fun. And you can remember those days if you had kids or if you played those, when you had four or five friends over, and they only had two controllers, so only two of you could play at a time, and whether it was Mario Brothers or Contra or, you know, one of those cool games that you played back in the day, you know, you had to take turns, right? And so you would be sitting patiently waiting your turn while your friend was playing, and you would be reminding them that as soon as your character dies, it's my turn, right? And then when you got it, you had the same reminder from your friends. When your character dies, it's my turn. And then what would happen? Your character would die and you would come up with some excuse. Oh, that shouldn't have happened, or there was a glitch, or I wasn't paying attention, or yada, 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 so I'm going to keep playing. And then your friend would look you in the eye and you would have one of those moments, right? One of those conversations where they would say, promise me that the next time your character dies that you will let me play. Swear to me. Remember that, right? Cross your heart, hope to die, stick 1,000 needles in your eye. And then if it got really serious, if you kept taking your word back, you would say something like, swear on your mother's grave. Or if you were a good little Christian kid like I was, swear on the Bible. Ooh, that's when it gets serious, right? That's when you know you're saying something that you can't go back on, is when you make someone swear on the Bible. And so you would do that, and then you would get to playing, and then you would die in an inopportune time, and you wouldn't want to give up the controller yet. And what would you do when your friend reminded you, hey, you swore to me this would happen, and this goes beyond generations? You would do this number, right? Fingers crossed, right? I don't have to abide by my word because my fingers were crossed. If they said, no, I saw your fingers, they weren't crossed, then what do you do? You say, well, you can't see my feet. My toes were crossed. And so I don't have to do what I told you I was going to do. There's something built in inside of us where we don't necessarily like to be open, to be honest, to be truthful, to be authentic or transparent because of whatever reason that might be. And in this upside down world that we live in, that we've been talking about for the past several weeks, we often trade simple truths for complex lies. We do a lot more busyness and make ourselves a lot busier and make it more difficult on ourselves by telling lies when the truth is very simple, but for some reason we want to hide from a simple truth and come up with some complex lie to put in its place. I had a friend who I wouldn't any longer call a friend because of dishonesty that I trusted very deeply. And there were points where he would lie about things. He was a compulsive, habitual liar. Maybe you've known someone like that. Maybe you've been that at some point in your life. He would lie about things that didn't make any sense to lie about, where it would have been easier, it would have been acceptable, it would have been fine if he would have just been open and honest with the truth. But instead, he ended up making this happen. And you know, if you get a lie, then you got to build another lie to make that happen. You learned that ever since you were a kid. And it becomes more and more complex, more and more difficult to keep up that fake reality, to keep perpetuating that myth and that fantasy world to where you just get busy, you just get tired, and you end up getting caught eventually. And that's what happened between me and my friend. And because of that dishonesty, that relationship broke down. And that's what we're going to look at today. In our passage, Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. Not only the idea of honesty, but how honesty affects our relationships with each other, with ourselves, and even with our God. Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Let me read that last verse. Let what you say simply be yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Now, this passage is similar to the last two that we've looked at over the last couple of weeks, where Jesus presents a portion of the law with which the Jewish people were familiar. You have heard that it was said in the last two we've looked at. You've heard that it was said you shouldn't kill. And again, everybody's okay. We're fine with that. I haven't done that. Jesus takes it to another level, says anger is worthy of the same kind of punishment that murder is. And it's the same thing in the heart. And then last week we looked at you shall not commit adultery. Again, most people were like, okay, I haven't done that. I haven't cheated on a spouse. But then Jesus pushes it further and equates lust and divorce to that same idea of adultery and worthy of the same judgment once again. And then here he presents this, do not swear falsely. And again, you might say, I got that down. But here's the thing, the further we get, like murder, almost everybody can agree, you know, unless you're in a prison for murder, that you haven't killed somebody and you're not going to, hopefully. And then the further we get, though, the smaller that group gets. And when we get to this point where Jesus says, even the law itself, you shouldn't swear falsely. There's going to be some of us, and I would probably say in my life, I have sworn falsely. I have lied. I have told someone that I would for sure do something. I had given them my word and then taken it back. But I can agree to this point, like I don't need to do that. I don't want to do that. I think I can go if I'm conscious about it as an adult without doing that, without swearing falsely. And then Jesus takes it to that next level where he says, don't even swear at all. This is the fourth of Jesus' six antitheses that we've been talking about. You have heard that it was said, but I say to you. And the reason why this one is different is because Jesus isn't necessarily quoting the law on this one when he says you should not swear falsely. Now, you can get that idea from reading the law, but the Jews had kind of set up a system when it came to oaths that Jesus took offense with. Oaths that invoked God's name to the Jewish people were more binding than ones that did not. Which he talks about swearing to different things, right? Swearing to some of God's creation, swearing by your head. He talked about the Jewish leaders later in another portion in the Gospels, swearing by the temple or swearing by the gold of the temple, you know, that sort of thing. If you didn't actually swear by God, it wasn't as binding. And so that set up a place where the people who were learned, the elites, the scribes and the Pharisees, could be purposefully deceptive to someone who didn't know any better. If they say, I swear by the hair on my head, I swear by the land that I live on, I swear by this piece of jewelry that I own, whatever it might be, I swear by something that is not God, then they could be purposefully deceptive, seem to be honest, but in reality be less than honest, be lying and be falsifying reality. So oaths that invoke God's name were binding when others were not necessarily as binding. Now, does that sound familiar? Surely we can't identify with that at all in our world today, can we? That some oaths are more binding than others? If you sign a contract, you know this, right? Gone is the day when you can shake hands. Long gone is the day. I've never lived in a day like that day. I've heard people talk about that day. But gone is the day when you can shake hands on something and that be an agreement, an official agreement. Not only that, in 2014, gone is the day when you can just like sit down and write up your own little contract and put a dotted line that somebody will sign, because what will happen? Somebody that has a lawyer will figure out a way around that contract, or they'll say it wasn't notarized, or there'll be some loophole in it. And even if you write really good legal language, there will be some other really good lawyer who can look at that legal language, dissect it, and say, yeah, my client signed this, but because of this reason, this contract is invalid. We don't have to live up to this end of what we said we were going to live up to. And so this idea that some words are more binding than others, if you say it in a court of law, that might be the only place where it's absolutely binding today. But you see that happen over and over and over again. Several years ago, my parents and my entire family, I was out of the home, but I was still a young adult. I was just getting started in college and in ministry. And my parents got involved in one of those multi-level marketing companies. You know what I'm talking about, right? And this one was, I don't want to say the name of it because I don't want to disparage an entire group of people, but this one was basically they had this magic powder is essentially what it was. And if you mix up this powder in your drink,
and you drink it, you know, once, twice, three, four, five times a day, you know, the more the better. The more you drink this little powder, then you'll mysteriously begin to feel better, body and soul and mind. You'll be happier, you'll be richer because you'll be a part of this business, you know, that sort of thing. And my parents bought into it. I hope they don't listen to this sermon online. Mom and Dad, I love you. But they bought into this scheme, and they bought into what was being sold because, not because there have been clinical trials that proved that this thing was beneficial, not because the FDA put its brand of approval on it, but because of what the company called testimonies. Right? Where someone would sit or write down something and say, because I took this magic powder, my blank went away. And there were all sorts of things that they said went away. Things that the medical world doesn't necessarily know how to address well, like fibromyalgia or something like that, that mysteriously disappeared. My arthritis is gone because I drink this magic powder and everything is suddenly better. And because it was a testimony, someone that had been through it, it wasn't binding. And so if someone came to this company and said, you claimed that your magic powder would do this, they say, no, we didn't. This guy took it and he got to feeling better. That's what he said. That's not what we said. That's a testimony that some customer gave. And they were able to hide behind that. Now, this guy who owned all this business, this isn't one that's currently out there because I think the guy's actually in jail, or at least he got in trouble with the law. And so he did say something that eventually got him in trouble. But you know those kinds of things, where words aren't necessarily binding. Or maybe you've even found yourself bending the truth in order to get what you want without really breaking it, right? Presenting things in a certain way where each sentence that you state might actually be technically true, but you give an impression that is less than true. You give an impression that's actually false. You find yourself talking to yourself after a conversation saying, now, I didn't really lie, but heads up. If you have to start a rationalization that way, you probably need to say something else. The best way to make sense of an argument to yourself was, well, I wasn't lying, but, then you probably just need to go ahead and get rid of that argument completely. Only being as truthful as you have to be in order to get what you want is not honesty. That is manipulation. And that is what a lot of the world sees as honesty. I will be as honest as I need to be to get what I want from you, and then we'll move on. I'm not going to tell you the rest of the story. I'm not going to be completely transparent with you. But Jesus is pushing for something different. He tells his disciples and everybody else who's listening on the mountain that day that swearing by anything at all, whether it's God or not, is really swearing by God because it all belongs to him anyway. The hair on your head that you just swore by, that's not even yours. You can't make one of those, well, I guess he wasn't talking to a 2014 crowd, when he said you can't make one of those hairs black or white because we can do that, but you know, the natural color, you can't change, you can't affect you know, what you're gonna look like or how many days you're gonna have. I swear by tomorrow, you know, I can't do that because that's not mine, that's God. Anything that I own, I swear by however many dollars I have in my bank account. I can't do that because God gave it to me. And if you have a correct view of how God blesses you, how God rules the world and everything in it, then anything that you swear by, whether it's this molecule in the air that I breathe, or whether it's something that you own or some relationship that you have, anything that you swear by belongs to God. And so swearing by anything is the same thing as swearing to God himself. Now the Cowboys are going to play later today. Hopefully Romo's back, we'll be feeling better, and we'll be able to play well, or Whedon will do a good job. And hopefully the Cowboys can win. But if I were to stand before you and say, I guarantee that the Cowboys will win. First of all, that means I'm not an educated Cowboys fan, right? Because you don't guarantee that the Cowboys will win. Second of all, nobody knows whether they're going to win or not. This is the NFL. It's professional football. Everybody and every team is really good. You never know from one Sunday to the next how one team is going to do and who's going to win. But would it add some validity to that if I said, I swear to you that the Cowboys will win, and I swear that on Brad Quisenberry's truck? Would that add some validity to that? I got your attention. I see you looking at me now. If I swore by Brad Quisenberry's truck, but that's not mine to swear by, is it? Or what if I said, I swear that the Cowboys will win on Preston's next paycheck, right? What if I told you that? Would that get some validity to what I'm swearing? I don't own that. I don't have any connection with that. I don't even get to see his paycheck, let alone have anything to do with him getting it. That's something that he earned. But in reality, it's all a gift from God, to the truck, to the paycheck, to whatever. And when we swear by anything, it doesn't really mean anything. We can act like it adds something to what we're doing, but in reality, it's just words being thrown out into the air uselessly that don't make any difference to reality, because we don't truly own the world, and everything in it belongs to God. Nothing is something we own. We've all borrowed it from God. We're going to have to give it back someday, whether we want to or not. And so until then, we need to stop swearing by anything, because it doesn't belong to us. Just as Jesus goes on to say, just say yes or no, and leave it at that. Other translations will say, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Just simply say yes or no. And the real lesson that Jesus is proposing is a need for transparency in our relationships. What Jesus has been talking about with these last antitheses, you've heard that it was said, but I say unto you. He talked about anger breaking down relationships. He talked about sexual sin breaking down relationships. And now even this idea of honesty, whatever you want to call it, honesty, authenticity, transparency, being real, keeping it real, whatever it might be, Jesus proposes this because it is another one of those bases for relationship, for healthy relationship. The real lesson is a need for transparency in relationship. A guy named Edward Schweitzer, who's a commentary writer, writes this. He said, when human discourse is debased so that under certain circumstances, yes can mean no, and no, yes, community is destroyed. If I cannot trust your word, if I cannot trust what you say to me as being real, as being honest, as being indicative of the real nature of things between us, then there is no relationship. Those of you who have been lied to by people you really, really trust, I've been there. You know how heartbreaking that is. Maybe you're in a business deal and your partner lies to you. That business deal's done at that point, isn't it? It's hard to rebuild that trust. You can rebuild that trust, but it's very difficult. And at least in that moment, that relationship is broken. Maybe it's been a spouse or a child or a parent give you their word, and then all of a sudden the word you find out doesn't mean anything because they don't live up to that word. Maybe even yourself, you've been on that situation where you gave someone your word and then you took it back, or you went against it and you broke their heart, you broke your heart in the process, and you left a relationship in shambles, because trust, honesty, authenticity, transparency is at the heart and at the core of what it really means to be in a relationship with each other. If I don't know you, I can't be in a relationship with you. If I can't trust you, I can't move forward. I can't have community with you if we don't build that community on trust. So Jesus says what we've heard for generations, what parents have taught their children as long as humans have existed, that your word is your bond. What you say ought to be what you do. What you do ought to be what you say. And it's time, just like it has been with the other two things that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, it's time to get urgent about turning this upside down part of our lives right side up. Saying anything more then yes or no, according to Jesus, is of evil. And again, Jesus puts it in very stark terms. If you're reading another translation, it might say it is of the evil one, which means it is from Satan. It's from the demonic. It's from the evil realm. It's not of God, basically. And so saying anything more than yes or no, swearing, being inauthentic, thinking that you have to trump up your honesty by attaching other things to it, none of that is of God. We ought to live in a church, be a world, be a kingdom of God within this place and within our body and within our community, where I can look at you and tell you, yes, I will do that. Yes, I'll be there for you. Yes, this is how I really feel. Yes, this is what I really said, so on and so forth, without having to trump it up with something else. Without having to constantly worry about, is that really how he feels? Is that really what happened in that room when I wasn't there and I heard that this and this happened, or I've heard this rumor about this taking place? What really happened? Look, I've lived in a Baptist church my whole life, minus 9 months, right? Or plus 9 months. I've been in the church as long as I can remember, and I know how horrible and how earth-shattering and church-breaking and dividing it can be when there are rumors flying around and nobody can trust each other. That's just the nature of community, first of all. That's the nature of humanity when we all get into that situation and we carry that into our church life. We carry that into one of the most sacred communities, sacred bodies to which we belong. We carry it into our marriages and our families, so it shouldn't be any surprise that we carry it into our churches. And when those things start flying, when you can't trust anybody, that's when division happens. That's when people leave, go somewhere else because they feel like they want to trust other people, or they feel like they can't trust, or they're not trusted, or they've broken trust and they don't know how to repair it, and so they run away, and it never ends well. And so here's the deal. Here's the thing that I encourage all of you to do. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you're displeased with someone, tell them. If you have a problem with a brother or a sister, talk to them about it. We talked about this in the anger sermon a few weeks ago, right? If you have something against your brother, leave your gift at the altar and go and take care of it. Jesus is about relationships, because what usually happens, right? Rumors bounce around. All of them have a little bit of truth and a lot of falsity involved in them, and you think that somebody else is horrible and thinking this about you, when in reality they said none of that. It got started because of something small. When you go and you address the problem, you figure out, hey, we both love Jesus. Hey, we both love this church. Hey, we actually love each other and we want the same thing, which is to see Christ glorified and magnified and people come to Jesus in our community and through our body. And then what happens? Right? If you're a couple of guys, you have the bro hug. You know, you have something at the end of it. Everybody gets along with each other. You work forward together. Amazing things happen because what? You just were honest with each other and authentic with each other. The worst thing that you think about a rumor, get that out of your head. Because that's not the reality of the nature of things. Instead, just be real. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. We claim to follow a person named Jesus Christ. And we claim that that person is the truth, the way, and the life. If we as Christians, if we as believers and followers of Jesus claim to know the truth, then we ought to be a people in the world seeking to be salt and light who embody the truth. And when people look at us, they ought to see an honest people. They ought to see an authentic people, a transparent people. And if they do not, we are pointing them somewhere else other than Jesus. And so it's an urgent thing. Anything else is of evil, Jesus tells us. It's urgent and it's time to do something about it. So here's your application this morning. First, be honest with yourself. That's where you got to start, especially in our world today. Maybe you haven't stopped and really looked inwardly, engaged your feelings about whatever you're going through. Stop and take that time. Admit to yourself how you feel. Admit to yourself what you think. Admit to yourself what your relationship with others, what your relationship with Jesus is like. If you don't know who you are, no one else will either. And so it's time to stop and think about, who am I really? What am I thinking really? How do I really feel about this situation? And getting that right in your head. Next, be honest with God. I know that should go without saying, but how many times have you found yourself in a prayer, even when you're all by yourself? You're praying, and you pray the prayer that you always pray. God, be with this sick person, and be with that sick person. And those are wonderful prayers that we should all pray. We should all be thinking about the ill, all those sorts of things. And be with the Ebola crisis in Africa, and you know, so on and so forth. And you pray about all the stuff that needs prayer, that needs your attention, that certainly needs God's attention, that has God's attention. But that issue going on in your heart, the broken relationship between you and your spouse, or the harsh word that you're still feeling guilty about that you said to your children, you just kind of ignore it. Because that's not what prayer is for. Prayer is about, you know, doing what you need to do to feel good about yourself before you go to bed, you know, going through those normal prayer requests instead of being honest and open with God. You know, dishonesty was probably humanity's second sin. Adam and Eve ate from the fruit of the tree that they weren't supposed to eat from, and then what happened? They hid from God. They ran from honesty and authenticity, being real about what had happened, and hid from a God who knows everything. God knows who you are, whether you tell him or not. Prayer is not the place to try to impress. God knows who you really are, whether you tell him or not. Be real with God. If something is conflicted inside you, if some relationship is broken, if you feel guilty, if you feel wonderful, whatever it is, just allow prayer time, instead of being a checklist of prayer requests and praises, let it be a time instead when you are real with your Abba Father. Like you would talk to your daddy that you love or your spouse that you care about, someone that you can just be real in front of. Allow that time of prayer to be that between you and God, where you are honest, real, and transparent. And then finally, be honest with others. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Transparency is to a relationship what sun and water are to a garden. It helps relationships grow. It is the life by which relationships thrive. Let me tell you a little, I'm going to tell on myself a little bit. There's a plant, or should I say there used to be a plant in my office. Now there's just dead stuff in a pot. Because when I got here, I saw the plant, and foolish me, because I'm a guy, I don't have a green thumb at all. I have a thumb that, I don't know, eats Cheetos, so it's orange, I guess. But it's not green, it's certainly not green. So there's this plant, used to be this plant in my office that I thought was fake. Turns out it's not. Turns out it's dead now because I didn't water it, because I didn't give it what it needed. If you aren't honest and authentic and truth-telling and real in your relationships, you will find them withering away to nothing, because a relationship that is built on something that isn't real isn't a real relationship. Your relationships need honesty, need transparency, need you to have the kind of word where you can say yes or no and leave it at that. Not have to sign a dotted line, not have to say, yes, I swear on such and such, yes, I promised this time because I lied last time. No, building a relationship of trust where you can just say yes, no, and leave it at that. What God did when he created you is good enough. What God did when he put you in the place that you are in is good enough. What God did when he led you into the relationship that you are in is good enough. You don't have to trump it up. You don't have to add to it. You don't have to swear on such and such and that and this and everything else. You don't have to make the truth more flowery than it is, because the truth is of the Holy One, Jesus Christ, and the truth is a beautiful thing. The truth will set you free. There's all kinds of wonderful scriptures about truth. So let's just celebrate in that. Sometimes it might seem ugly. Sometimes it might seem chaotic, but it's the truth. God has delivered it into your life. He can redeem the truth and turn it into something beautiful. But if it's falsity, if it's dishonesty, God can do nothing with that. It can do nothing but sap the energy out of your relationship with God, with each other, and even the way that you talk to and talk inside yourself. So there's the application. Be real with you. Start with you. How are you going to be real? Are you going to be authentic with yourself? Admit how you really feel about situations. Take the time to think through things. Engage how you're doing inside. Then will you be real with God when you pray to him? Will it just be a checklist, or will it be something that you actually open yourself up to him? And then finally, be real with each other. Let your word be your bond. Be the kind of person where you can say yes or no and somebody will trust you and take it to the bank. Be the kind of person that doesn't pull it out at the end and say, fingers crossed, I wasn't really telling the truth, right? I just want what I want. I'm only going to tell enough truth to get by. Instead, just lay it all out there. Be real with people. Be open with people, because that's how relationships grow. That's how relationships are built. And in our world, we need people. We need followers of the truth to love the truth enough to not cover it up with anything else, but to be transparent, so that others may see the truth of Jesus Christ inside of us. As we enter into our time of invitation, if there are any of you here that don't know the truth of Jesus, I would love to show you him for the first time this morning. You can come and pray with me during that time. But for those of you who do know Jesus as your Savior, are you being truthful inside? Are you being truthful with him in prayer, or is it just some rote memorization thing that you go through? And finally, are you being truthful in your relationships? In your workplace, in the way that you do business, in the way that you manage your finances? Are you being truthful? Are you standing up for what is true and transparent and authentic? If you said yes or no to somebody, would they trust you? If not, it's time to get urgent about building your trust and your relationships on reality and not covering them up with false things. Find out where falsity exists in your life. Find out where your need to cover things up comes from, and then deal with it. I can help you with that. If you want to pray right now with me after the service, or find me in the office, or call me on the phone, whatever it might be. It's time that we, as followers of the truth, stand for the truth and be transparent so people can see the truth in us. If you need to pray about this or anything else during our time of invitation, please do that. Now let's stand together. Bill's going to lead us. I'm going to pray. You move in whatever way God is calling. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this morning. God, we come to you right now knowing that all of us cover stuff up from time to time. Because just like Adam and Eve, we're embarrassed and we want to hide. Sometimes it doesn't even make sense when we hide from the truth because it would be easier. Yet we find ourselves going back to this lying, this need to cover up, this need to say yes, but. God, forgive us of that. God, show us where that is in our hearts. Show us where that is in our relationship with you and in our relationship with others. And God, help us to evict that out of our lives so that our relationships with you and with others might grow. I pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.